while we are here, the energy of the divine is pouring into us, because that is the nature of a gathering that has said we will be here as the divine which we are. And however you know that to be, that is our experience, is it not? So when you walk in the door, it starts. And when you leave, it doesn't stop. It goes on and on for as long as you choose it to go on and on. And for me, I choose forever. So, without further ado, and I will speak just a little bit about each of the mystics that I'm reading from, because their lives are quite amazing. Tonight I'm going to be reading a poem by Kabir. For 500 years, the poems of Kabir, and he was 1440 to 1518, have been recited and sung throughout India. Kabir was a great religious reformer in his time, as well as a famous artist and musician, founding a sect that still claims to have millions of followers. There was a sword in a museum not far from me. It once was used by a great prince to defend his country and faith, and many limbs and heads it severed. One day that sword will die, as all things will, and it will stand before God, and the sword's eye will behold the splendor of heaven behind our beloved. And the sword will wonder with all of its heart, will God let me in because of my life? And God will say to the sword, as God does to every creature, no harm done, no harm done. Forever welcomed are all. The next is St. John of the Cross. St. John of the Cross, 1542 to 1591, has long been recognized as one of the world's greatest mystical poets. His verse reveals a profound, tender experience of divine communion. When his father passed, they moved from a very small village to Medina del Campo. And in that city, he was educated at a Jesuit school. And because he was an excellent student, very exceptional in Latin, at the age of 21, he then went and spent 4 years at the University of Salamanca. He had the extraordinary experience of meeting Teresa of Avila, whom we've already talked about. And Teresa was very taken with him, and he with her. And in 1577, as a result of trying to reform the Carmelite order of which he was a part, and because of his alliance with St. Teresa, he was kidnapped and put in a monastery's basement that was used as a prison, and he was tortured. And it went on for a very long time until he became permanently crippled. And during this time of, and it was the monks who were torturing him, during this time he wrote some of his most extraordinary work. And he honored in every moment that this was his part in the divine play. And he accepted it, but hoped that he would at some point be freed from this imprisonment. For 9 months he was in prison and confined to a tiny cell. Actually, it was an unlit closet in the basement. He was left to relieve himself on the floor in this tiny cell, and his few scraps of food and water were sometimes thrown into his feces and urine. And he was regularly beaten by the priests to the extent, as I say, he became permanently crippled. But then he began to ask, please, through every vision that he had during that time, if he could indeed be freed. And then he had a remarkable experience or vision. He heard a duet in which God and he were the singers. I am dying of love, darling. What shall I do? And the beloved responded, then die, my sweetheart. Just die. Die to all that is not us. What could be more beautiful? Let us all be like that. The poet Mohammed once said, "Die before you're dying." And then, a contemporary religious figure, which some of you may know, Meher Baba, once said, "Being is dying for love." Being is dying for love. And here we are with the poems. The first one is, "If you might quiet the whole world for a second, if you pray, and if you love, if you really love, our guns will wilt." Once I said to God, "How do you teach us?" And God replied, "If you were playing chess with someone who had infinite power and infinite knowledge and wanted to make you a master of the game, where would all the chess pieces be at every moment? Indeed, not only where he wanted them, but where all are best for your development." And that is every situation in one's life. I believe there's divine order in all things. And in knowing that and experiencing the life that I have lived, I honor that even when the exterior world says, "It's this, it's this, it's this," the divine order is very clearly shown. And it is only our egos that say, "I want what I want when I want it. And I want it right now. And if I don't get what I want when I want it, I'm going to be very upset." Now, knowing that the ego is a wily fellow and will want to have its way, the soul, and we are here to talk about soul, the soul very quietly will say within us, "Listen, for there is more to be said than the want of the ego." And those words that come next are the words that often we fail to hear because we're so busy looking at what we want when we want when we want it. And so to make that shift from this seeming desire that everything be a certain way to allowing that which is unfolding to unfold, and to be in still peace and quiet as it unfolds, without expectation of the outcome. Oh my. Most of us have extraordinary expectation of the outcome, do we not? Y'all can nod your heads up and down. Yeah, okay, we do. We all have that desire. And in allowing the soul to truly speak through us and give us the knowing of what is appropriate in every moment, then something else happens in our lives. And it may not have the same drama. It may not have the same pull. It may not have even the same texture or taste. It may have a very, very different energy that we are allowed to participate in if we choose. And in every moment, we get to choose one or the other. And often, this is my experience, if I begin to choose soulfully that which is about in my world, then interestingly, over the years, my ego has gently, slowly, sometimes not knowing what was going to happen next, has come into alignment with my soul. So often, when I used to, my ego would run after whatever it wanted. Now I find it is very quiet and says, "Ah, what will the next moment bring?" rather than its needing to be in charge of what the next moment will bring. And as we flow in this beautiful stream of consciousness, which is our life, then we have an experience of something that is not only very beautiful, but allows us to be at peace within. When I was growing up, there wasn't a whole lot of peace in the family. There was a lot of energy going on. And in that place, I would try and find my solitude. And my father or my mother would come and find me and say, "We have no time for sitting around. You've got to come. There's so much to be done, and we've just got to do it. And here's the time frame." And so I would dutifully get up and work, and then I'd run to find another place of solitude. And as I grew, and as certainly my parents watched my particular unfoldment amongst four children, they realized that part of my life had to have that place of solitude. And I then realized that I had to find the solitude in here. That the way my childhood was, I couldn't really find solitude in the exterior world because there was too much going on and there was so much responsibility that all the children had to take. So I learned how to go within. And this was such a blessing to come to that at an early age and to be able to feel that place within myself and how sweet it was. I want to continue that theme, but I want to talk tonight about beliefs. Beliefs are a mental construct, and the beliefs that we have usually have been imprinted upon us through our mother and father, both negative beliefs and positive beliefs. And as children, we said, well, that's the law. That's the belief. Then as we grew, we realized, I don't know about that belief. I don't know if that really fits in my world. But often, I kept it very quietly within myself because I noticed that my other siblings were pretty much staying in alignment. And I was kind of veering off. And as the more I veered off, the less the beliefs really supported me. I didn't feel that those beliefs were truth for me, but I didn't have anything that I knew in the exterior world that could come and explain what that was. In my interior world, my soul, that divine consciousness, was continually supporting me to make the shift in the curve, for which I'm very grateful. I give you an example. I never knew about pierced ears. Didn't have a clue about pierced ears. Didn't grow up pierced ears. Piercing the ears. Didn't know anything about them. And then when I got to New York, where I danced for several years, everybody had pierced ears. So, of course, I immediately ran out, found a little shop, and they said, "Piercing the ears." I said, "Okay." And they said, "How many do you want?" I went, "How many do I want?" I said, "Well, one in each ear will be just fine, you know?" And I'm a child of the 60s, so you can imagine. Everybody was pierced all over. Okay. So I get my ears pierced. And I'm doing a concert, and my mother comes to see it. And she enjoyed the concert. And at the end of the concert, she said, "You have pierced ears." I said, "Yes, Mama, I do." She said, "You know, only gypsies have pierced ears." Now, is that a belief or what? And I went, "Oh, my goodness, I've really gone around the curve." So I said, "Well, Mom, what do you think?" And she didn't make any more remarks. She had said her belief. And as time went on, I continued to dance. And about 2 or 3 years later, I was in another quite large production, and my mother came to town, and she said to me, "You know what I want to do?" I said, "Mom, what do you want to do?" She said, "I want to pierce my ears." And I went, "Mother, let's go." So we go back to the same little shop, and she gets her ears pierced, you know, and then she gets her wonderful little new earrings, and they tell her how to take care of her ears and so on. And I was just amazed. I said, "I cannot believe the shift." And then I realized that my mother had given me a certain level of freedom in my childhood, and I was giving her a certain amount of freedom in her adulthood, that she was able to see what was happening through me and all the things in her world that she had hoped she could explore that had not been a possibility in this embodiment, that I, in some way, had been able to do that for her. And this was her way of honoring that camaraderie, that other deep level of energy that can happen between yourself and a parent, which I never expected would ever happen in this embodiment. So I felt very blessed to have had that moment. And I realized that as I had shifted many of my beliefs, which were very different than the household in which I grew up and my parents' beliefs, that the expansion of my consciousness was very often in relationship to letting the beliefs go. Now, when I would come back into the family, I would try my best to align to what the family was holding. What the family entity said, this is how we do it. So I would make every effort to align. Of course, that was rather a joke, but I would try. And of course, I would look totally different than my siblings. And they'd say, we just don't like the way you are now. We just don't like what's happened to you. Absolutely this is not the way it should be. And I would look at them, and of course there was a part of me, my heart would break. But at the same time, I would say, they have carried these beliefs. This is what they agreed to do in this embodiment. This is part of their soul agreement. They are going to hold these beliefs. And I, on the other hand, said, I've got to find the beliefs that work for me. And every one of us who are sitting in this room have been through this process in some way or other. We have said there is a level of consciousness that we wish to hold that is true for us. And it meant, yes, leaving the family entity to a very large extent. Yes, everybody understands this. We left the entity of the family so that we could become fully within ourselves, however that was going to look. And it didn't mean that we were separating never to return again. I would say that the lines of energy, when I was first in the family, they were like, I can't say they were chains, but they were very powerful lines, very powerful lines. And as I moved further and further away, the energy was less and less. And now, when I reference my family entity or I reference my siblings, the line of energy is much more heart to heart. And where it used to be was head to head. It was what we thought, what our beliefs were. And now, all that has begun to shift. And everyone says, oh, well, they'll say, this is my sister Mary and she's different from us. Or this is my sister Mary and she has some really strange ideas. Or this is my sister, she's the creative one in the family. Which if you're creative, at least from their point of view, then that meant you were allowed to be different. Does everybody know that one? Yeah, a little bit of that, yeah. So that, the nature of belief that can literally stymie in many ways how we wish to grow in our consciousness. And when we are aware of the brilliance of our soul and the magnificence of being on the earth plane, particularly at this moment, have we not chosen an extraordinary time to be here? I mean, I hope everyone has honored that and said, wow, did I make a great choice? This is a time of profound change on the inner and the outer. And we are not only the observers of it, but in the way that our soul moves us through this wonderful life, something else can evolve. And each of us has our own particular vibration that we're resonating with in the tonality of what the divine is creating. And we might say, well, I'm really not very happy with my life. And that's all right. Perhaps you're holding that pole of energy. We've come to the earth plane to learn through polarity, so perhaps this is the pole that you're holding infinitely well, and others are holding another. In my family, one of my sisters is disabled, and she is holding that energy, and I was holding the energy of the dance. We once did, I guess you'd call it a lecture demonstration, in front of a hospital staff in another city, in another state. And we were doing this in several different hospitals. And at one point, one of the nurses raised her hand, and my sister was being addressed, and the nurse said, "How do you feel sitting in your wheelchair and your sister Mary is dancing?" And without pause, my sister said, "I'm as creative in my space as she is in her space." So she realized that she was holding that. She had come into the embodiment to hold that energy, not only for our family entity, but for every person that she touched. Every person that she touched. And I was holding my pole of energy, and I was touching everyone that I would touch. And to be able to see the play of energies that unfolds in our lives is so incredible. And to be able to acknowledge, what is the part that I am holding? What is the energy that allows me to go through my day and see the magnificence of it, even the greatest simplicity? I believe everybody is my teacher. I don't believe there's one soul that is not my teacher. And when I am with individuals, regardless of how I might meet them, I honor, here's one of my teachers. Let me be present, absolutely present, to know what it is. I used to have to travel on the plane a lot in my work. And it was back in the 70s when I was really doing a lot of traveling. And they were still serving fairly decent meals. And the divine had said to me, there is no chance about who you're going to sit with on these long flights. Whoever sits next to you, pay attention. And I went, thank you. So I would be quite excited to get on this plane and go this long distance, because whoever I was sitting next to was my teacher. So I would prepare myself. I'd say, okay, I'm ready. Okay, whatever it is, I'm ready. So I get on the plane and I sit next to this gentleman, and he's older and he looks very sad. And I thought, oh, perhaps I'm here just to hold that sadness, so I'll wait and see. And it was a long flight, and eventually we got to talking, and he said, what do you do? And I told him what I did. And then he said, without my asking, he said, well, I'm a minister in a Christian church. And I said, oh, so interesting. He said, my son has just come back from Vietnam. He was a soldier there. This was during the Vietnam War. And he said, my son said to me, my faith, I've lost it. And I cannot believe in what I was raised to believe. Those beliefs no longer serve me. And I am alone. And the father, even as he spoke about it, he wept. And he said, I could not console him. Our faith no longer supported him, and he felt utterly alone and did not know where to turn. And I could not even begin to know what that felt like, because I had always had that deep faith, always, and I just assumed he did too. So his son said to his dad, I've got to go on a journey and find out who I am now, because I am not your son anymore. The experiences that I had in Vietnam have torn the heart out of me, and I do not know who I am. And I'm sure he had post-traumatic stress as well, but they didn't know what it was back then. So he went on his journey. And the father said, eventually, he came back home, and he said, Father, I have found that which I sought. And the father said, what is it? And he said, I am a Buddhist. And his father turned to me on the airplane and said, do you know what Buddhism is? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, it was so shocking to me. I mean, shocking. And I said, and how are you now with it? And he said, I love my son, and my son is at peace. He said, I don't understand Buddhism, but it has brought peace to my son. And if it has done that, then I am so grateful, so grateful. And I thought, what a teaching, that through love, he loved his son no matter what. Even at the deepest core of his religious beliefs, which the son could no longer believe, It's like the prodigal son coming home, not to the father that he knew, but to who he had become, who the son had become and who the father had become, and the compassion of the father for the son, who now said, "I'm a Buddhist." So I went away with that teaching, and I said, let me look at anything in my world where I have said, in some sort of strict way, it's this way, you know? Because when you grow up with this way, and if you step away from this way, then it is the journey of what will fill that place in your life. Or is that to be empty? Is that something that you will not fill? That you will allow it just to be what it is without your having to place anything within it. And I have found that emptiness is one of the most beautiful places in the world to be. Emptiness and silence. Oh, let me be in emptiness and silence. And let that inpouring of energy be such that in the emptiness I may receive whatever is being given. So now, as I go through my days, I know and acknowledge every single one who is a teacher. And even when I'm at a stoplight, sometimes I'll just look over, you know, glance over at the other car, and I'll look at that person who's there and think, there's another teacher. I may never see them again in the moment, but let me send them love. Even if it all it is just a quick glance, you know? The love that can be sent in just a glance is profound. Profound. And sometimes we're just not paying attention to all the love that we can give and all the love that we can receive. I believe one of the reasons we all love nature is because nature says, I love you, I love you. You know, I really love you, I really love you. And if you're not finding it there, all you have to do is just turn to the other side of the room, or other side of the mountain, or other side of the tree, and there it is, you know, the love that you've been waiting for. I had an experience in Glastonbury some years ago, and Michelle and I were walking down this wonderful walkway, and suddenly I looked down and I said, Michelle, look. And he looked down and he said, what? And I said, darling, the feathers. And there were these white feathers on the sidewalk in front of us. And I went, unbelievable, look at this. And I gathered a few. And I went within, as I do when extraordinary things like that happen, and I say, tell me what this is. And I was told, the kingdom of those who fly will be giving you gifts so that you will remember that birds fly in order to inspire us to raise our vibration higher and higher and higher. So any time that you see a bird take flight, in that moment, the teaching is this the moment that you will now raise your vibration a little bit higher and a little bit higher? Will you expand into that wonderment that the bird flies through and says, this is my kingdom, and we are that kingdom too? And so it was that I honored that. And every day since then, and that was how many years ago, darling?
Four
years ago, every day, a feather has been brought to me every day, and sometimes more than one. And I tell people this, and then they find feathers, and then they bring their feathers to me that they found. So on certain days, I have even more than one feather. And this morning, you know, I just go where I go and do what I do, and there's a feather. So I honor that. When we are aware of and open to all potentiality and possibility of the miraculous in every moment, we will experience what that is. Now, I did not ask for the feathers. I didn't realize that that was going to be part of what this life of mine would look like. And I have these bowls that are just brimming over with feathers, you know, and it's quite marvelous. And I realize also that in our lives, just as I am receiving these feathers every day, if we're in that awakened moment, we will receive that which is perhaps the, shall we say, the similarity to my feather coming into your lives. but for us to be awake to that and aware of that, and to honor that our souls are continually saying, did you get that moment? Did you see that moment that just happened right over there? Did you see the way the sun did this and the moon did that and the stars did this? Did you see the way that the air moved? Did you see the wonder of that? Were you aware of that little bug down there? And I go, oh, that bug right there. To be aware within such a sensitivity of consciousness that the words as below, so above, as above, so below, that this connectivity that we have with the divine is shown to us in so many ways that we cannot even imagine. It is unbelievably rich. And it is for us to open and receive what that is. Now, often people say to me, well, I'd really like it to look like, or why didn't that look like, or I didn't really get that. Did you really get that? What was that? That's just the ego conscious mind. When you move into the right side of the brain, into that divine soul consciousness, you're just open. You just open. And you say, oh, okay. Let's see. And just by being open, that very act of opening to what is, for me, the miraculous in my life, it comes to me unbidden. Unbidden. I do not bid it to come unto me. I am simply open, and I receive whatever it looks like. And it does not always come in beauty. Sometimes it comes in other forms, and I then have the opportunity to do what? Expand my consciousness to embrace even that. And it's very warm in here, and lots of people are starting to nod off. I know, honey.
It's taking a while.
Okay, okay. Y'all all right? Okay, just stamp your feet on the ground. Just get some blood in the feet. You're trying to, you know. Okay. Now, the whole idea of the expansion of consciousness, the first time I heard that, I thought, what would that feel like if I expanded my consciousness? What would that feel like? And the divine said to me, every time you choreograph a new dance, you are expanding the consciousness because the dance is evolving in a new way. No dance is ever the same. Every dance is different. So every day is different. Even though you may have, as I do, I have my silence, and then I do my stretching, and then I do my breakfast, and then I, you know, then I do my phone calls. You know, we have that measuring through our lives and our days. But within all of that, to seek and to hold the magic and the wonder of those unexpected moments, those things when you look out the window, as I do often, and I will see a crow, and is it some other little bird, probably a dove or something, and they're playing in the sky, and I'm going, unbelievable, you know, to see them swooping and turning, and they just try to get the crow just right, and then off they fly, and the crow just goes, whoosh, whoosh, and off he goes. It's just quite brilliant. So little things like that. And I love ladybugs, and often just to be aware when ladybugs come around, and you just, I mean, how precious are they? How beautiful? And I just go, I just love you all, and you're having such a good time. And they'll come and they'll attach themselves to the window, and I don't know how they do that. And then they just sort of walk around and have a really good time, and then they'll land, and they'll say, well, Mary, we really enjoyed being with you. And I'll say, well, I really enjoyed being with you too, and whoosh, off they fly. But that moment is so precious. And often in our human relationships, there are those moments of such beauty, and sometimes they just pass by. One of my practices I call scanning the day, and I would just offer it up to all of you as a wonderful, wonderful thing. I scan my day at the end of my day before I sleep, from the time I awaken till the time I sleep. And I look at each and every moment. It doesn't take long to look at what was happening, what I fulfilled, what I did not, what I realized in hindsight I missed. An opportunity to say how much I love my beloved. An opportunity to say thank you for something that occurred. The opportunity to be able to deepen within myself as I hear of news, sad news, hard news, of war and pain and sacrifice and suffering, and how to open my heart and take that in and bless it and hold it and be clear that my love is present there. Your love is all over this planet. It's everywhere, darlings. It is not just right here. It's everywhere, and it's always there. So when we hear of anything that's happening on the planet, instantaneously, our love can be there. And when we know that that is so, we allow ourselves to open our hearts and hold whatever that is without judgment, without judgment. And sometimes that's very difficult, because particularly when you hear of the things that are happening in the world that are less than love, and whether it is war between countries, war between tribes, or war between two people, or three, or a family, or whatever, to be able to hold that in our hearts and say, this too I can hold. Often, when we're asked to do this, sometimes we say, I can't hold that. But you can. Your love is immense. And if we allow ourselves to hold even that which before, even the moment before, we said, no, we cannot hold this, to say, yes, I can hold this. It is one of the great practices that we have. And our souls are already there, darlings. Our souls have already been there because we have held that thought, and they are there, and therefore we are there. In this time where instant information is going around the planet just like this, and that is the mind of Mother Earth, this great somasphere of consciousness, and it is connected with all these wonderful little gadgets that everybody has, right? And you can be anywhere in the world in the moment, just like that. And as a result, we're being invited to become like that. The mind of the divine does not say, I think only one thought. The divine mind is open to all possibilities and allows for the embracing of all things in our love. How big is your heart? I used to say, oh, I don't know. I mean, I felt like my heart was pretty squeezed up when I was a little kid, you know? So much was happening, I was all squeezed up. Anybody have that experience? Yeah, I did. And then, as the divine said, now, you just got to open your heart a little bit more. And I'd say, okay, all right. But don't ask too much of me, because this is a big stretch, you know? And then, okay, here's the next thing. Now open your heart to that. Now open your heart to that. Okay? And it got easier, but that which I was going to embrace became bigger. So I had to have a bigger range in my love. My love couldn't be Johnny One Note, right? I had to be able to have many other tonalities, many other tones, many other colors of energy within my love to be able to encompass and hold even that which was the darkest of the dark. And I could not use any judgment. This is good, this is bad. I had to relinquish all of that. And I had to say, no. I am to be present, lovingly present, no matter what it looks like out there or inside myself. And that was one of the great early teachings that the divine gave me. Show up. Just those two words? How often are we willing to show up, even when it is where we do not want to be? Show up and be lovingly present, no matter what it looks like out there or inside ourselves. Now, if I didn't like what was out there, what would I do? Whew. I'd just shut it down. I was so good at that. Anybody else good at that? Oh, good, good. I'd get a little response. Great. Yeah, I knew how to shut it down. And then once you shut it down, it takes a lot of energy to do what? Open it up again so that you can love. And then the divine would say, a little bit more, Mary. Come on, girl, you can do it. I think, oh, okay, a little bit more. And when the shutdown would come, it wouldn't be completely shut down, okay? And then it was easier to open up again. And then the shutdown would get a little bit less, and the opening up's a little bit easier each time, each time. until when I could feel that complete openness and acceptance of all that is. Now that's a huge thing to say. Accept all that is. Not some that is, or this part that is, but all that is. And how we are being invited to expand even more of the all that is. And it's in all dimensions of consciousness. And as you know, I work with souls on the other side. And from time to time, that energy of movement and awareness of that is happening in the formless is almost more real than this journey in the form. It's quite amazing. And sometimes I realize that when we are moving and expanding our consciousness and opening our hearts and becoming more loving, of course, the formless becomes more and more into our awareness. Why would it not? Because we are also in the formless at the same time that we're here in the form. If you believe that you're only here, then you've missed a whole other realm of consciousness that's available to us. And our joy is that we can be here and there simultaneously. Now, the first time I used to speak about that, people would say, well, maybe she needs to go into the bug. We used to call it the bug house. The crazy man's crazy person's house over there, the asylum. And I would say, actually, no, dears. That is part of the flow of all that is being able to move from the form to the formless. Now, that may not be one of your soul agreements. Maybe one of your agreements is, I'm going to be here in the physical and be lovingly present no matter what it looks like out there or inside myself. This may be your embodiment to really work that. To get that, to be fully present in love no matter what. And then it may be that as you're moving energetically in that way upon the earth plane, that the formless, we've all had movement of energy. Everybody in this room, I can see. Everyone in this room knows what I'm talking about when I say the formless. This is not unknown to you. Everybody knows what the formless is. Now, you may not resonate with that now. That may just be a flickering of energy that happens now and then. Or it may be something that is absolutely in concert with how you're living your life. Yes? And when you feel that you're in concert with the formless, then of course, when you're in form, it's so delightful because you can feel it, taste it, hear it, touch it. It's tactile. And all of your senses are fully aware of the beauty and wonder of what's going on here. In the formless, it's a whole other level of energy. It hasn't anything to do with this. So we get to revel in this while we're in the embodiment, and if it is part of your soul agreement that you're going to be aware of the formless, then of course you'll have that experience too. Everything that's in our world, everything that's in our world is here for us to love, just to love. And most of us, I can only speak for myself, I used to pick and choose. I said, oh man, I want to love that over there. That's so good over there. Let me love that. Let me be the one who loves that. And you take this over here that I'm not too interested in, okay? This is my part right over here, okay? And the divine said, I got news for you, girl. You got to love all that. I went, uh-oh. Now, tell you why. The divine said, see a piece of pie. And it's all cut in pieces, okay? If you focus, truly focus on your piece of the pie, really get it, this is my piece of the pie, then interestingly, by focusing here, everything becomes one. But if you don't focus here and you jump around to each of these different pieces of the pie, then none of it will be yours. And this was a very important thing for me to know, that if I focused on being one with all that is, but had complete consciousness about my own piece of the pie, the work that I am here to do, then everything else would be known unto me. Now, many of us have certain little slices that we really like a lot. It's very tasty, and it works just great for us, and it feeds us in some really neat ways. And we go, wow, you know, really excited about that, because I get to do my little piece today. And then the divine will say to me, yes, dear, wasn't that pleasant? But guess what? You forgot this other part. I go, rats, right, okay. So I've got to open up and experience more and be willing to really focus on what is before me. What is it that I have come to do? Now, I know that the one thing I've really come to do, absolutely, without question, and I've had to really learn how to do it, is a four-letter word, and it's called love. I believe that this embodiment for me has been so powerfully anchored in love. What it feels like to not receive love, I know exactly what that is. What it is to receive love, I know what that is. And now, the giving and the receiving of love has become one continual energy, like a figure eight of consciousness that simply moves unceasingly in the giving and the receiving. And they are one and the same. It appears that giving is one thing and receiving is another thing, but actually it is not. It is just one continuous flow of energy. And we are allowed in this embodiment to make any choice of giving and receiving that we choose. And I don't believe in free will. I think that's a bunch of hooey. I think you have God will. I think the will of God moves through each one of us if we awaken sufficiently to allow it to come and to be one with us. I believe that God will is why we're able to be in this room and why we're able to open our hearts and why we're able to speak the truth of our being. Why we're able to love unconditionally. God will is a very powerful thing, and it allows us to do that which we never dreamt we could ever do. And each one of us in our lives has seen the impossible made possible. Each one of us in our lives has been able to live in that God will. There are the esoteric rays. The first ray is God will. The second ray is love wisdom. And it seems to me that if we were to live impeccably in God will and in love wisdom, that we'd all be sitting in this room. Why would we not? What brings us together so that we can love each other? And we have so many moments when we can love each other. And how brilliant it is that the divine completely knocks my socks off and creates all these wonderful interactions of consciousness. But the will to show up and the will to be lovingly present. I talked about this in one of the meetings, maybe last meeting, when Michelle and I think we were in Las Vegas. And there's a big sign that said, "Show up to win." And I went, far out, here we are in Las Vegas, and you have to show up to win. Well, that's pretty much our lives, right? Show up to win. Now, what are you going to win? What's the big jackpot? What's the big prize? Okay? What is the big prize? Anybody? Peace? What else?
Happiness?
Love? Starts with a W. Wisdom? Okay, what else?
Joy,
thank you. What else? What else?
Freedom,
thank you. What else?
Presence.
What else?
Compassion,
thank you. What else? Is that it? I hope not. No, Lord. Excuse me?
Happiness.
Light.
Okay, that's a bunch. But as you are doing your practice, whatever it is, you may ask, what is, if, and everybody in this room knows that they have already won. You do understand that. Everybody in this room has already won. You've already won the jackpot. Okay, you've already won. Now, right on, stick that coin in there and cha-kung, there you have it. So, if we've already won, then our capacity to love is not about anything out there. right? Because we've already won. So anything out there is just anything out there. But our capacity to love means that we're going to do what? Embrace all of that. Hold all of that. Nurture all of that. Have compassion for all of that. Allow that which is unfolding to unfold. I mean, I grew up in a family where there were a lot of laws and a determination that here was the only way. And I thought, there's got to be other ways. But of course, I didn't know what they were until I went around the curve and said, ah, I see, there are many ways, many ways. And each one of us has found ways that we can be not only lovingly present and open our heart more and more, but also have the richness of life in a smiling face, in a gentle touch, in awareness of the other as that divine being. There isn't anyone on the planet who isn't a divine being. Their costume may be very different from ours, and their energy field may feel very restricted. But the soul is there, and that is what we're asked to embrace, is the soul of every human being on the planet. So I don't worry about the costume anymore. Used to, I don't now. I don't worry about what the conflict is, because I know that in divine order, that too is playing out in some way that is not for my understanding. But what I do understand are the souls that are in that conflict. I do know the souls. So when we embrace, we are embracing the God presence in every single person. And people have said to me, and I've shared this with you all, when they say, well, what about these people who do heinous things on the earth plane? I said, their soul is there, but it is in deep meditation, because they have chosen a soul agreement that they would come and do this, else they wouldn't be doing it. It wouldn't be unfolding. It would not. But it is serving something that I may not ever know in this embodiment. Now, when I'm on the other side, after I've left the body, I'm sure if we ask the question, we will be shown. But while we're here, we're not being asked to ask questions, are we? No. We're being asked to just do one thing. L-O-V-E. It's so simple. But to do it, you got to build that spiritual muscle, folks. You got to build your spiritual muscle, and you do that through the practices, whatever your practice is. And you do it as you go through your day. And you look upon your mind. When I scan my day, I look at my emotional body, my physical body, my mental body, and my spiritual body. But I look at my mental body and I say, what was the beauty of my thoughts this day? Where did I forget about the beauty of my thought and go into judgment or criticism? Where would I might have had a thought that was less than love, either toward myself or another? I look at every single thought I've had in the day. And if there is a thought that has been less than love, I bring that thought unto me. And I ask to be forgiven for that thought, and that I will replace it with a thought that is powerfully in love, and that I will choose that thought over the thought which was less than love. Okay? Same thing with my feelings, actions, all of it, all of it. Because if we are to be fully awake and fully in love, then it's very important that we look at everything. And if we truly look at our thoughts, sometimes we need a little Windex to kind of clear the pain there, because it can get really mucky, you know, wookie mucky, and you can hardly see what those thoughts were, and you just take a little Windex, which is your love, wipe it off, and you say, okay, I want clarity now. I want to see what the thoughts are. How do they arise? Why do they arise? And then to be able to love them, even if they are less than love, yes? Because your love is the most powerful thing on the planet. It will change those thoughts and assist you in doing that. I mean, sometimes I just want to go, y'all ever want to do that? I might be the only one in the room, but yes, I do that. I'm a quadruple Scorpio, and I have a lot of humph. Okay. And I just have to kind of be in the flow, and I've learned, you know, I can just feel that energy coming up sometimes, and I just go, okay, thank you very much, that was really nice, but we just don't need that right now. Down we go. And through the loving of it, of course, it has become less and less, less and less. And I hope that by the time I leave the embodiment, I'll look down and it'll be all gone. And everyone will say, what happened to Mary? She lost her frump. I'll say, well, I couldn't give it away, right? I could not give it away. I had to transmute it into something else. So, tonight is one of those moments where we are opening to so many different possibilities. And the divine said to me, and this is going to be part of what we work on this evening, I'm going to do a process with you all. The divine said to me, your love is the most powerful thing on the planet. And I'm going to do a process around that this evening, because I feel that sometimes we don't want to acknowledge how powerful our love is, you know? You know that little song? Let me see if I can sing it. It's a camp song. Boy, I'm going back 70 years. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine all the time. Hide it under a bushel, no. I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel, no. I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel, no. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine all the time. Now that's your love. If you can really get that energy moving, it has a momentum all of its own. We come into inertia, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy to go from inertia into momentum. Okay? But once you get into momentum, the momentum just keeps going. But if you stop it, then you've got to start all over again. It takes a lot to go from this inertia. We all know this. If you're in inertia and you want to get something done, you say, I just don't think I can do that right this minute. I think I just can't. Well, of course, you're not going to get it done. It takes a lot to say, I'm going to do it. But once it begins and the energy is moving, it's absolutely profound what can happen. Now, in our spiritual life, it's no different. If we want that love, our love, to truly be all that it can be in expressing itself, not only within us and through us and as us, but upon the earth plane, because that's why we've all re-embodied, then okay, here we go. We have to come out of that inertia and into that momentum. And every day, at the end of the day, if you scan your day and you say, how was the flow here? How was it? Did I come into inertia again, or did I keep the flow of that love moving? Was it something that I could feel, truly feel, moving within me and going from me out in every possible way? And one of the ways we do this, so we don't get into inertia, is to give thanks unceasingly. The divine said, do you want to wake up? I said, I'm on. I want to wake up fully. The divine said, you only have to do one thing. One thing. I said, tell me that one thing and I'll do it, I promise. Give thanks unceasingly for everything. 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 Even that which the moment before you said, I cannot give thanks for this. That's when you're going to give even more thanks. Because you will have built your spiritual muscle to be able to say thank you for that. And as I go through my day, I find the joy of giving thanks is so fabulous that I wouldn't not want to do it. And so at the end of my day, after I scan my day, I say, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for the scan. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. And when I go to bed at night, I started my prayer life when I was probably 5 years old. And I've prayed every night since then and during the day too. So that's 70 years of giving thanks. But I was very particular about how I was giving thanks in the early days, right? Just a little bit here and a little bit there. because I was afraid I might run out of thanks, right? So I had to be very careful about where I did it. And then the divine said, no, darling, you got to give it to everything all the time. And so now it's just the momentum of that, the momentum of the thanks and the love that comes when you're giving that thanks. The deep appreciation, even for that which the moment before you said, I cannot give thanks for this, even that. And there have been many things that have occurred in all of our lives where we've said, I do not know that I can give thanks for this. And yet we do. We do. If we choose to wake up. Now that may not be part of your soul agreement. But I don't know that you'd be in this room if you weren't going to wake up. You'd be doing something else tonight, but you're here. So that means there is the momentum of your own love propelling you into that place of greater and greater awakening and expansion into consciousness, which is so beautiful. And now we'll sit in silence, please. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who've gathered to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this, and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day, unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you. And I open my heart and I bring you Gaia, beloved Mother Earth, into my heart. Thank you, Gaia, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. And thank you, Mother, for nurturing us and loving us through each and every one of our embodiments. Thank you, Mother. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring you, beloved elementals of earth, air, fire, and water into my heart. Thank you, dear elementals, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. And thank you for your union and communion with Mother Earth and your union and communion within every cell of our physical body, for without you, we could not exist upon the earth plane. Thank you. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring the whole of humanity into my heart. Thank you, beloved souls. All souls who are in the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. All souls who are leaving the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And all souls who are coming into the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And to my soul, thank you. I love you. Thank you, dear beloved souls, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, dear beloved souls. I love you. And I call now that the divine which we are gently open our eyes. Thank you, everyone, for being here this evening. Thank you for coming. Your love is the most powerful thing on the planet.